light, the heat. Your eyes. I am complete.
Your eyes.
See the doorway.
Welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is July 12, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of podcast number 83 is In Your Eyes, Tetracaine for Corneal Abrasion. And I have not a guest skeptic, but a rebel skeptic today. You may better know him by his website, Rebel EM. Welcome back to the S-Gem, Salim.
Thank you for having me on again, Ken. I really appreciate it.
Now, Salim, you've got some exciting news about an amazing announcement. Why don't you tell the S-Gem listeners what you've got cooking?
Yeah, just kind of following suit after doing a couple of podcasts with you and a couple of guest episodes on EM Rap, I decided to go ahead and launch one of our own podcasts called Rebel Cast.
So what are the goals of your Rebel podcast?
Yeah, I think the biggest goal for our podcast is that there's just so many articles coming out every day in so many journals, and it's just impossible to sift through all of them. So myself and a couple of guests, authors on the site, are actually going to pick up a few of these articles and kind of set up a hypothetical case or clinical question, go through the paper, nothing as in-depth as what you and the Beam crew do, and then hopefully be able to give a clinical take-home point from that article.
So you hinted there that you've got some rebel teammates. Who else is on the team with you?
Yeah, so I'm lucky enough. I got joined by Matt Aston, who is a EM physician. He's also internal medicine as well at Mercer University School of Medicine. And then Anand Swaminathan, as everyone knows him as the Swami, up at Bellevue NYU.
And tell me, Salim, tell me, this is all going to be part of the foam, right?
This is always going to be free. People can register for it on iTunes or just come onto the Rebel EM website and download for free. It will never cost a penny.
Welcome to the FOMED podcasting world. Let's get started, though, with a case scenario. A 47-year-old man was playing Marco Polo with his teenage daughter in the pool, and he accidentally got hit in the eye and sustained an uncomplicated corneal abrasion. So what's the question for today's podcast, Salim?
Of course, is the use of topical 1% tetracaine for 24 hours safe and effective for the treatment of uncomplicated corneal abrasions?
Salim, do you know what Marco Polo is?
I used to play it when I was a kid in the pool.
So just for everyone out there who may not be as familiar with it, you have one person who's it, and it's like a game of tag, and you go around with your eyes sort of closed, if you're not cheating, and you yell out, Marco! And Salim, what's the other person supposed to say?
Polo.
Right, and all of a sudden, whack, right in the eye, corneal abrasion. So let's talk about some background information, though. Corneal abrasions are very common presentations to the emergency department, and I can tell you, quite painful. We've all been warned, of course, that topical anesthetics to take home should not be given to patients with corneal injuries. I mean, it's the fear that, oh my goodness, you know, your eyes will rot out. But is this fear of the drops really true? The fear is that these drops could delay or decrease healing, prevent recognition of foreign bodies in the eye, cause keratitis, or worsen corneal symptoms. Now, some of this information comes from animals. Yes, fuzzy little bunny rabbits. Of course, no animals were injured to make this podcast. Also, some of the data comes out of local anesthetics that were injected directly into the anterior chamber of the eye for cataract surgery. So I'm not sure about the external validity from bunny eyes and injecting into the anterior chamber to the corneal abrasions that we see, Salim. So I'm going to list a few of those studies that led to this fear providing topical anesthetics could be detrimental to patients' eyes. But are these dangers of topical anesthetics for simple corneal abrasions fact or fiction? So what paper are we going to review today on the S-Gem, Salim?
So Waldman et al., their article was titled "Topical Tetracaine Use for 24 Hours is Safe and Rated Highly Effective by Patients for the Treatment of Pain Caused by Corneal Abrasions," a double-blind randomized clinical trial, which was published in Academic Emergency Medicine this year, 2014.
What was the population they were dealing with?
Patients presenting to the emergency department of Southland Hospital in New Zealand with corneal abrasions, and they had a total number of 116 patients.
And what was the specific intervention that they were using in this study?
Acetaminophen 500 milligrams plus 1% tetracaine hydrochloride topical eye drops.
And what did they compare it to?
Acetaminophen 500 milligrams plus placebo, which they used saline eye drops for.
And what was the outcome measure they were using?
They had primary and secondary outcomes. The primary outcome, was repeat fluorescein slit lamp emergency department examinations at 48 hours, 1 week, and 1 month telephone interviews for corneal complications. Their secondary outcomes were related to pain, in which they used the 100 millimeter visual analog pain score recorded every 2 hours while the patient was awake for 48 hours, and patient perceived overall effectiveness with a numeric rating scale, which ranged from 0 to 10.
And there was a number of exclusions that they had. We won't list them all here, but we will list them on the blog so people can go through them. And I think it's important that people realize that these weren't all comers with corneal abrasions. They did have some specific exclusions. The author's conclusions were, quote, "Topical tetracaine used for 24 hours is safe, and while there's no significant difference in patient's visual analog score for pain rating over time, patient survey on overall effectiveness showed that patients perceived tetracaine to be significantly more effective than saline." End of quote. Salim, we've got 11 questions to go through, which is the quality checklist for randomized control trials. So can you run those 11 questions with me? And by the way, 5 is my favorite number, but when you can go to 11, that's my second favorite number. So question number 1. Was the study population included focused on patients in the ED?
Yes, it was. These were all patients presenting to a regional emergency department in New Zealand.
Were the patients adequately randomized?
Yes, they used a numbered sealed envelope system to randomize their patients.
Was the randomization process concealed from patients and study investigators?
Yes, both the authors and the patients were blinded in this study.
I think that's kind of funny, don't you? It's a study in ophthalmology and they were like blinding the... No, it's not even worth going there. Okay, so number 4, the patients were analyzed in the groups which way they were randomized?
Yes, 2 arms, 1% tetracaine versus saline eye drops.
Question number 5, the study patients were recruited consecutively?
Yes, patient enrollment into the study basically occurred at any time during the day or night, 7 days a week, and was dictated in part by staffing levels and demands on the department.
I thought that was one of the strengths. I mean, often we'll see papers that it's a convenient sample or a non-consecutive sample or banker's hours when the research assistants are there, but they were doing this 24/7.
And I agree with that. That's more realistic to what most of us are doing in the emergency department. And oftentimes these people are coming into our emergency departments not during, as you said, banker hours. It's usually during off hours when they finally get off work.
Yeah, and I find that, a peak time is when they're trying to get to sleep. And, you know, when they're trying to go to sleep and their eye is killing them. And so they come in going, yeah, it's just been bugging me all day. But then I tried to get to sleep and it's just killing me. Question number 6, the patients in both groups were similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes, they all were.
How about all participants were unaware of their group allocation?
So this wasn't exactly clear because there's comments in the paper itself where some of the patients kind of commented that the drops they were using burned like the eye drops they got when they came to the emergency department at their initial visit. You know, there's some question of whether this may have unblinded some of the physicians and even maybe some of the patients to realize that the drops they were using were actually the tetracaine drops and not the saline drops.
How about question 8? All groups were treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
How about follow-up? Did they get at least 80% of patients?
So actually they didn't. They only got about 70% of patients at their 48-hour follow-up.
Yeah, and you know, looking through a literature review on this, this was a common problem when it came to these types of studies because people would be lost to follow-up. And one of the explanations in previous studies was the patient was better, so they didn't come back for their follow-up. How about question number 10, all patient important outcomes were considered?
Yes, they were. They specifically looked at pain relief and corneal complications, which is what we care about, what patients care about, and what the ophthalmologists care about.
So the final question, number 11, the treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant.
So no, 23 of the patients were actually removed from the data analysis after a 48-hour checkup. And this was due to retained rust rings, making the study very underpowered to detect differences in corneal complications and pain scale evaluation.
Now, I hope the listening audience could hear that sigh you had in your voice when you did that. It's like you so wanted this study to be powered to show that tetracaine was both safe and effective. But I heard it. I don't know if the audience heard it, but it was this, Salim, it was just this, no. So let's go through their key results. What was their primary outcome?
So the primary outcome was at 48 hours, no statistical difference in healing identified by fluorescein uptake between the two groups. 20 patients had persistent symptoms, or 10 out of the 46 patients in the tetracaine group versus 10 out of 47 in the placebo group.
How about 1 week? That was another one of the primary outcomes.
Yeah, persistent symptoms in 5 patients total, so 1 in the tetracaine group and 4 in the placebo group.
And they did extend this out to 1 month when they were doing that primary outcome.
And yes, there was no complications reported by either group at the 1 month mark.
How about secondary outcomes?
So there was no difference in 100 millimeter visual analog pain scores at any given time between the two groups.
How about when they asked patients the perceived effectiveness of the drops?
Patients perceived effectiveness at 1 week, 0 was not effective and 10 completely effective. And there was a statistical difference in this, 7.7 for the tetracaine group versus 3.8 for the saline group.
And this was on a 0 to 10 scale with 0 being not effective and 10 being completely effective. And so those patients getting tetracaine scored 7.7 when they said, how well did this drop work? It was closer to 10 when you looked at the patients getting the placebo or the saline drop, which was 3.8. So let's talk about some of the comments that we are going to make about this study in general. And the first one I want to make is that this was the largest randomized clinical control trial to date. They had 116 patients which they could evaluate the use of topical anesthetics for corneal abrasions. There was no significant difference in healing between the two groups. However, only 93 patients returned for their primary outcome of follow-up at 48 hours.
Yeah, and another problem was the large number of patients with retained rust rings, 13 in the tetracaine group and 10 in the placebo group. This was really unanticipated and made it challenging to analyze the data.
The study was underpowered to detect a significant difference in efficacy between the two groups, both in the 100 millimeter visual analog pain scale. This represents a common limitation to randomized control trials. They are powered for the primary outcome, not for the secondary outcome. However, their goal was to look at safety, and that did not show a difference between the two groups at 48 hours, 1 week, or 1 month.
So patients self-rated their pain about 50 out of 100 on the visual analog pain scale, but within 12 hours, both groups had dropped to below 10, and at 24 hours, they both approached 0. This speaks to the amazing healing properties of the cornea and made it nearly impossible to show a clinically significant difference between the two groups at 48 hours.
In addition, the study may have been unblinded, and you mentioned that earlier when we were going through the 11 questions or checklists. I mean, tetracaine, if you've ever had it, it causes some local irritation, and patients commented specifically on the drops burning like those drops they got, which were the tetracaine drops, in the initial ED evaluation. A placebo drop which causes mild local irritation could have been used rather than saline to try to help blind that a bit better. this potential unblinding may have caused the secondary outcome of patient perceived overall effectiveness to be inflated. Because if people know, ooh, I'm in the treatment group, ah, I must be feeling better, we know that that can have an effect. Certainly, if researchers wanted to know if the study had been unblinded, they could have simply asked the participants and said, hey, what group do you think you were in? And then they could have rated, well, I got the placebo or I got the active treatment, and see if people were guessing more than randomized chance.
And finally, I had some issue with patient compliance with drops not being recorded. This makes it really unclear whether drops were being used as instructed or if being used at all.
Yeah, and this data that we've gone through agrees with a couple other smaller studies looking at acute corneal injuries. There was one by Ting et al. On the management of ocular trauma in emergency trial, or the MOAT trial, and that was in the Journal of Emergency Trauma and Shock from 2009. The other one was by Ball et al., and that was in the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medicine, published in September 2010. But Salim, what were the authors' conclusions compared to our conclusions?
So I have to say that one small randomized control trial does not prove safety, but it does help chip away at the myth that these drugs are toxic when used correctly.
All right, so let's give them a bottom line. Let's give those listeners what they came for. What's the bottom line? And from our standpoint, the bottom line is tetracaine appears safe for uncomplicated corneal abrasions and provides more effective pain relief than saline drops. Now, Salim, when we were going through this, at 48 hours, 1 out of 5, or 20% of patients, still had symptoms at 48 hours. So what are we going to do when people still have symptoms at 48 hours and we're working in an emerge shift?
At that point, I would be picking up the phone and consulting my local ophthalmologist.
Well, you know what? Let's just do that. Hello, yeah, this is Dr. Ken Milne. Can I speak to Dr. Louis Proust, ophthalmologist from Michigan? And so I have a special guest on the program today, our ophthalmologist consult. Welcome to the SGEM, Lou.
Thanks, Ken. Glad to be here.
So, Lou, tell me, what would happen if we called you up like that to get a consult on a 47-year-old man playing Marco Polo with his daughters, gets hit in the eye, has a corneal abrasion, and isn't feeling better in 48 hours? When I send this individual to you, what would you do with this patient?
Well, Ken, the first thing, of course, is to identify and eliminate the risk of infectious keratitis. Anyone who has a corneal abrasion, the main risk is that they will develop an infectious keratitis. And some of these things can really get devastating if you don't treat them right away. So I'd look at the cornea, try to identify whether there's any signs of opacity. Assuming that there's not, then the next thing to do is to treat this patient symptomatically and try to get this abrasion to heal. And what we traditionally do is we place a bandage contact lens on the eye. This is really simply a disposable contact lens.
So just to interrupt you, I haven't seen these bandages. You know, you're not putting like a bandage over their eye or a shield or a patch over their eye. This is just a contact lens?
Yeah, we call it a bandage contact lens, but essentially this is a standard everyday disposable contact lens like anyone would use who's got a prescription, except that the power is zero.
So it has no refractory power. It's not correcting vision at all. It's just you're looking through it.
Exactly.
And it's not biodegradable. You have to remove this and take it out?
Yes, it would be removed when the epithelial defect is healed.
So how long would you leave this bandage contact lens on?
Well, Ken, that depends entirely on the size of the defect. If the epithelial defect was, let's say, a 5-millimeter defect vertically and horizontally, it might take several days to heal. If it's a smaller defect, let's say it's 2 or 3 millimeters vertically and horizontally, that might only take a day or two.
And so you alluded to you're going to try to prevent infection. So what kind of eye drops, what category of eye drops are you going to give?
Well, you want to put them on a powerful antibiotic. So the standard of care these days is to use a fourth generation fluoroquinolone. So that would be something like Zymaxit or another drop called Vigamox. Those are the ones that we tend to use. But also to get some gram-positive coverage, I might add a gram-positive drop too, such as a simple drop like Polytrim to give a little more gram-positive coverage.
So you're going to use a bandage contact lens. You're going to give some antibiotics. How about the pain? I mean, that's why they came back, because they were still in discomfort. Do we extend that tetracaine, or do you use something else?
Well, you can give tetracaine, and sometimes we do use topical tetracaine, but the bandage contact lens changes as a game changer. I mean, that'll take someone's pain score from 10 out of 10. As we know, the pain from corneal abrasions is terrible.
Well, your patients may say 10 out of 10, but the patients in eMERGE say, my pain's an 11.
Well, you've got them down to a 10 by the time they see me. And then you put that contact lens in, and they're down to, you know, it's reduced by 80% just with the contact lens. And then we also put them on a topical non-steroidal drop. And that's usually about 4 times a day. And that makes it all very manageable. So with a contact lens and a topical non-steroidal drop, and then the topical antibiotics for prophylaxis for infection, they're pretty much covered. Rarely would I ever have to use a topical anesthetic at that point.
And so when would you see them at follow-up?
Well, the standard of care is to see them every 24 hours. And really, the main risk factor is you want to make sure that the epithelial defect is healing underneath the contact lens and that they're not getting an infection. So the standard of care is that you really want to see them at least every 24 hours. If it's, let's say, a Sunday, you might let it go 48 hours. Everything's looking just perfect, but you'd inform the patient, listen, if there's a decrease in vision or you're having any pain, you call me like now.
Excellent. I think that's great. Isn't it nice to get an ophthalmologist on the phone who's going to help us like that, Salim?
Yeah, I mean, my ophthalmologists are they're actually pretty quick in coming into our emergency department and actually very helpful and say very similar things that he was just saying.
Well, let's get this back to our case that we presented to begin with. And we're not going to talk about the 20% that we have to call Dr. Proust, our ophthalmologist extraordinaire, for. Let's talk about the other 80% of patients that come in and say that it is better. So our case resolution for this guy is you offer this Marco Polo player some 1% tetracaine to use for the next 24 hours. The drops sting and burn, but they do make it much easier to get to sleep that night. He's seen in the emergency department for follow-up in 48 hours. The pain is gone, and the abrasion is completely healed, and we do not need to call our ophthalmologist friend. So Salim, how are you going to use this information in your clinical practice?
Yeah, so topical anesthetics are better at patient-perceived pain relief compared to oral pain medications and saline eye drops, just based on the study that we reviewed. The evidence, unfortunately, is not that robust, but it is leading and pointing toward and indicating that topical anesthetics are used, if they are used appropriately, and for a short duration of time, 24 hours, there really is minimal to no corneal complications.
So, Salim, what I tell my patients, you know, in plain language is, you've got a scratch on your cornea, the surface of your eye. Here are some eye drops to help treat the pain. It is safe to use these for 24 hours. Your vision is important, so we've arranged to see you back in the emergency department in a couple of days. But please come back earlier if you have increased pain, decreased vision, or otherwise concerned.
And I agree with that. And I think that's the key, is that you have to talk to the patient. I think a lot of us just kind of write these prescriptions and let the patients go. And I think it's important to emphasize that 24 to 48 hours, that if they're not having any benefit and they're not improving at that 24 to 48 hour point, that's when they need to come back and not keep using those eye drops to mask whatever is going on with their cornea or their eye.
Exactly. And I always like to say out loud, I care about your vision. It's important to me, and I would like to know if it's not getting better. Please come back. If you're concerned, I'm concerned. We're always happy to see you. We're open 24/7.
Absolutely.
Now, the reason I asked you to be on the podcast was not just to plug your new Rebel podcast, but was because you did a blog entry on your Rebel EM site where you discuss, what was it, 5 issues?
It was 5 different issues. So I had some help with Swami on this, and he kind of helped with some of the historical components, and then I kind of went through some of the more current research and literature. And so we go through 5 things, as you say. We go through historical case reports, case series, and animal studies, which is the dogma of topical anesthetics being unsafe for corneal abrasions.
They didn't use any dogs in those studies.
There were no dogs used in any of these studies.
They were rabbits.
They were rabbits and rats. That's what they used. The second thing we went over was other trials evaluating the safety and effectiveness of topical anesthetics. The third point was my review of the Waldman paper, which we just did a very formal podcast on. And we discussed the additional commentary that came after the publication of that paper. The fourth thing was, is how your pharmacist in your emergency department or just even in your hospital can help make a 1-10 dilution of topical anesthetics in case you're worried. And for us, at least here in the States, the standard concentration is 0.5%, and we'll oftentimes dilute 1-10, making it a 0.05% solution. And then the final thing is, what is our take-home message for the safety of topical anesthetics?
Great. I encourage everybody to go over there because you've got some great graphics, pictures. You've got some tables of all the different studies. It was an excellent resource if you want to follow up for some more information. Again, great work, Salim. Keep cranking out this great foamy stuff.
Thank you so much, Ken. Just trying to keep up with the likes of yourself, Michelle Lynn, Scott Weingart, and many, many more.
So from Keener contest standpoint, there was no winner last week. I guess that Swedish skeptic, Dr. Katrin Herska, came up with a question that was just too hard. But for this week, since I've got an ophthalmologist on the line, I'm going to ask Dr. Proust if he could give the Keener contest for this week's show.
Well, Ken, there's a lot of refractive surgery done in the United States right now, and, well, I guess all over North America. Over 1 million procedures are done per year. Each one of these procedures creates epithelial defects, which are essentially corneal abrasions. And so it's all those patients are potentially at risk for infection for the first several days after their procedure as their eye is healing. So the Keener question, Ken, would be, what is the majority of the infections? What is the organism that causes those majority of those infections now in 2014?
So if you know which organism is the number one responsible organism for all of these ophthalmology-caused corneal abrasions by correcting people's visions, then just send me your answer, thesgem@gmail.com, with Keener in the subject line, and the first person to correctly answer the question will receive a very cool skeptical prize. We've got two upcoming conferences, one in Quebec City, this September, the 29th and 30th, so mark that on your calendar. And if you want to go to Prague and experience some foamy goodness, we have a Eurobeam December 5th and 6th. Salim, thanks again for being on the podcast, and good luck with your new show.
Thank you so much, Ken.
So Salim, could you give the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.